Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the reproductive rights amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Jimmy of House Nuts, and we're going to be ranking House of the Dragon episodes according to you, the viewers.
Yeah, we asked you guys polls over on our YouTube many times after each episode. And so I ended up going through and doing like, you know, having to do the math to figure it out because it's rated out of 5 stars. To see what order you guys felt was the best. So it was a 1 out of 5 star ranking for each individual episode. And then I asked you guys at the end what you thought of the whole season. And actually, I don't think it matched up with... it didn't actually match up with the average ranking on the other thing. So I don't know how math works. I don't know how polls work. I just had to know the individual things and then I went in and did it. Okay. So
sometimes the numbers just don't make sense, you know.
Sometimes the numbers don't add up, I guess. But I did add them up, and they're right. But here we go. So diving in here, let me get this into my MacBook here. So let me get this in here. So 10 episodes. The lowest was a 4.43 stars. The highest was a 4.73 stars. It ended up being a 4.5 average per episode for the whole season.
That's pretty good. Sounds like the viewers enjoyed it. And that's a tight margin.
Yeah. Oh, some of these are incredibly tight. So at 10th place, we have episode 2, The Rogue Prince.
You know, I was expecting this one to be a little bit lower just for the fact that the pilot was so good. And then on top of that, it was very much a character building episode, a bit of a bridge. And I'm not shocked. I guess one of them had to come in last place, huh?
Yeah, it did. You know, and I remember after when we were doing it live, right? Everyone was like, oh man, it's slow, and we're like, well, every episode can't be, you know, crazy. that was one of the things I remember, right? So following the death of Queen Emma, a weakened Viserys Targaryen agrees to take a new wife. Meanwhile, Daemon ignores Lord Corlys' concerns about the conflicts in the Stepstone. So that was kind of what was going on in that episode, right? Remember Alicent goes to comfort, right, Viserys, right? And then people are saying, oh, here should be your new wife, you know, you should take a new wife. So certainly an interesting episode.
Not to mention the fact that we got the awkward Viserys and Laena walked in the garden together, which the silver lining to that awkward walk was the fact that we got to hear about Vhagar for the first time. That was pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So again, it's in last place, but it's still a 4.43 out of 5 stars, your guys' rating for the episode. So I'd say that's still probably pretty solid, to say the least, right? I mean,
Coming across, I mean, you know, we weren't sure what to expect firing the old bandwagon up for these live watch alongs and live reviews afterwards. We were not sure where we would stand as far as the audience goes, because when Bend the Knee was exploding, it was during season 8 and everybody had an opinion. And, you know, it was very much so that a lot of people did not enjoy it. So we were not sure what to expect just from, you know, viewers. We were hopeful, but it turned out that it was a pretty consistent experience, I think, throughout the season, with a couple hiccups, but for the most part, a pretty consistent show. And it obviously comes through in the evidence of the polls that we ran, which were so fun.
So much fun. Yeah. And looking here, IMDb has this as, I believe, their second lowest as well. So I'd say, actually, looking at their rankings, and I'll try to bring them up, and I guess I didn't piece it together and how it would be ranked. Oh, I guess you can, so that makes it easy. So they had this as their second lowest, so we were kind of in line with them. So okay, our number 9 spot was episode 6, The Princess and the Queen, which ended up being a 4 point. So here's the difference, right? So 10th place was a 4.43, 9th place was a 4.4. So not a big margin, to say the least.
Yeah. And I know that episode 6 was, you know, most likely going to be one of the tougher ones for us to get through because of the 10-year time jump and the actor switch. Actually, my in-laws just told my wife, because they finished the season and they loved it, but they were very confused and they were also very sad to see the actresses switch. Even though I guess by episode 10, they really, really like Rhaenyra. So that's pretty cool. But I think everyone knew that it was going to be a tough sell for the time jump.
There was also some ringing of the bell in this episode, right?
How did that not make my top moments?
I know, man. So there was that. And then, of course, this is actually IMDb's lowest rated episode at 8.1. So still pretty solid. And I would say we're pretty in line, at least with our viewers, was what this ended up being. But yeah, you know, the time jump, I think, was kind of confusing for some people, especially because I have another poll on our YouTube. And I said, whose performance as Rhaenyra did you like more in House of the Dragon? 15,000 votes, which is 10,000 more subscribers than we actually 10,000 more votes than we have subscribers. So if you're one of those people, you know, voting, if you could maybe just hit that subscribe button, really appreciate it.
Yeah, just slap it.
But 58% Millie Alcock, 42% Emma Darcy, which is about where I expected it. And all of the comments actually are saying, you know, loved both, really don't want to have to choose. But if I had to choose, I think she sort of stood out more.
That's interesting, because I feel the opposite. I enjoyed both performances, but after seeing Emma Darcy, I much prefer that portrayal.
Their performance, yeah. Mm-hmm. So interesting. I think it was, if I had to say anything, also the episode itself, you know, you have the time jump, so you have now the older actresses and the, you know, and the younger actresses, and then of course you also have the kids have now grown up a bit too. And that one also starts with that cold open birth scene, right? Remember? And then her and Lainor are walking, and
that's a powerful moment for Rhaenyra.
Right, did it hurt? Oh. Right? I mean,
what are you doing?
What are you doing, man? Definitely. So interesting here. So, okay. So now we have a bit of a jump when we go to number 7. Our 7th spot, so counting up here, we have episode 4 at King of the Narrow Sea, 4.49. So a little bit of a jump here in terms of rating. So that means everything else above this, by the way, is also above a 4.49 out of 5 stars. So King of the Narrow Sea, episode 4, right? So what's going on in that episode? Rhaenyra continues her search for a suitable match. Daemon returns to King's Landing and stirs more trouble for the king. Rhaenyra learns a valuable lesson. This so is where IMDb has it as an 8.5 out of 10.
Yeah, so this is probably my favorite of the first five, actually. The first half of the season, this is my favorite episode. This is the one that had Rhaenyra and Daemon running into Flea Bottom and the puppeteer show is going on. And then Kristen Cole gets his, you know, he loses his honor but gains a little something else and all that good stuff. I really, really like this scene. I actually thought that the way it was shot is one of the reasons why I enjoyed it so much. So this probably would be my favorite episode out of the first half. I'm kind of surprised it's this. I say low, but it's still well rated. But
right, exactly. I mean, literally, some of these are fractions of a point, right? I mean, the difference of so you know, 10th place out of the 10 episodes was a 4.43. 9th place was a 4.44. So I mean, you're talking fractions of points. This is a 4.49 and the next spot is a 4.5 and the one above that 4.51. So I mean, you're talking like just, you know, the tiniest fractions in between these episodes. So yeah, you know, actually you and I sent you a message, Jimmy, on Twitter earlier today, and because we had just done our favorite moments of the season, and I said, you know, actually kind of thinking about it, one of the scenes that I felt was maybe a little more lackluster compared to what we saw in the books is the scene of Daemon presenting the crown of the Stepstones to Viserys. And I think it's just because the art, and I'll try to get it pulled up here. It's just a piece of like a Song of Ice and Fire art that's been around for a very long time. So people have used it in thumbnails and everything. And it's just this really awesome piece of artwork. So I'll get it pulled up here. But I don't know. I see that art and it puts me in the mind. And I thought it was actually maybe cooler than what we got in the show.
Yeah, for sure. Because basically what we get in the show is Daemon walking back straight up to the throne, bending the knee, presenting the crown. Nice moment for the show. But in the book, he comes riding down on his dragon. Big, massive event. I think it happens during a tourney as well, right?
I think it does too. Yeah, looking at the...
lots of tourneys.
Let me get the artwork pulled up here too. Yeah, and so it's just this awesome scene, right? The dragon's right here. So it's literally, he just flies right here. And then of course, you know, we don't get to see as much of the in back and forth between Daemon and Viserys and their sort of the complexities to their relationship, but it was in the book it makes it seem like, wow, Daemon's really coming back around. And
yeah, way more grandiose, right? And I think obviously some things are cut for budget. I think some things are cut to not repeat a tourney or something like this, but If there's one thing I wish I would have been maybe enhanced a little bit from the show, it would be this scene for sure.
Yeah. And I think also too, because like we didn't see Daemon, you know, in the previous episode, in episode 3, we see Daemon like, you know, kill that guy who brings him the letter from Viserys, right? Saying, hey, I'm going to, so we didn't have that. So here it almost felt like, wow, Daemon went and won this war and now he's coming back on sort of good terms. Yeah. Whereas maybe here the moment is not like tarnished, but impacted more by the fact that, no, this is still maybe Daemon on Daemon's terms, you know, so kind of interesting scene there. But nonetheless, this scene ended up, you know, being in this episode, and it was, what do we have it here? This is number 7, episode 4, the 7th best episode of the season. Okay, so at the number 6 spot, by literally a 1, you know, decimal point here, episode 1, Heirs of the Dragon, 4.5, which, by the way, let's think about that for a second, is crazy. That's, you know, I mean, you're in the 6th spot with a 4.5 out of 5 stars.
Yeah, and I thought for our viewers in general, I thought the pilot would be a little bit higher, because I don't know if you remember that first night when we went live afterwards, I was kicking my feet up in the air. I mean, we were like having
300 people in the chat. It was crazy.
Yeah, it was probably the most successful live stream I think we've ever ran. And it was something special, man. It really was, because we waited, you know, three or four years, and to see it actually come to life on screen and it be something that we could be proud of was a great moment for Song of Ice and Fire fans everywhere, I think. And I thought that this one was going to be like top 3 or 4, but turns out it's number 6. It's crazy.
Hey, well, it's just because, again, it's number six. At the one above it is, again, one decimal point. So you're talking two decimal points separate five from six, because it's literally that close. And I rewatched it as I was editing the podcast we did on Sunday that I turned them into videos, where you and I were talking about our top five moments from the season. And I had chosen the scene of Rhaenyra flying in. It's like, it's not necessarily the opening scene, because the opening scene, we get that sort of prologue with King Jaehaerys, which is, by the way, sick moment, and crazy that we got it. And that's how this whole thing started. So awesome that was even included in the first place. But man, I rewatched that scene of Rhaenyra flying in today to get some pictures of it for that episode I was editing. Man, it is just so cool, especially because the line right before it, right? And it's like 137 years before Daenerys Targaryen, and then boom, and it's just such, it was such a good, I thought that episode was so well paced. Mm-hmm. And to be a 4.5 out of 5, just in general, of course. So that, again, this list is, we're breaking down what you guys voted as the best episodes. For this to be everything else to be above a 4.5, that just shows you how just amazing season one, I mean, was.
Yeah, we definitely got lucky here. I think this is legitimately one of my favorite pilots of all time.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Better than the Game of Thrones pilot?
Yeah, better than the Game of Thrones pilot. Yeah.
Because the Game of Thrones pilot, to be fair, does have like... Well, I mean, to be fair, this obviously can piggyback off the success. It's
exactly
a decade, bigger it's budget. A decade later. Right. Computers, everything's better. The Game of Thrones pilot is pretty sweet, though, just because, like, I really like when, like, Robert's riding in and everything, and it's like, oh, what's going on? And
it's then, a very different tone, for sure.
Right. The ending of that episode, though, might be better than the ending of this, because you're just like, what? I mean, that is, you can look at that and say, that's the tone for the whole show, is Jaime pushing Bran at the
window. Listen, it might be time for a rewatch here on Bend the Knee.
I think it is. I think it is here. Comment here. TK, thank you guys for hanging out here in the chat. It's kind of an impromptu thing here. Just doing a Thursday night. I know there's football on too, but he says, I liked how the season opened with the council and the current king, then ends with his dragon. It was a cool callback. Yeah. We actually need to do a House of the Dragon rewatch too. Now we go back and watch it again.
Watch right? with fresh eyes. Yeah.
Exactly, because you pick up on things you because I always rewatched it during the week, but now I can go back and rewatch it start to finish, and you get to see, okay, they went this way because it's going to tie into this, just see the things that they set up throughout the,
maybe we do an 11-hour 10-hour watch along here on
watch YouTube. Along I'd be down. Let's, I could do that.
Cheetos and Mountain Dew and just
could do that. All right, here. So the number five spot, again, 4.51 out of 5 stars is what you guys voted on our YouTube. So just a one decimal point higher. Episode 3, Second of His Name. Right. This is Daemon and the Sea Snack. Sea Snack. Well, for some people, it really is a snack, right? Daemon and the Sea Snake battle the crab feeder. The realm celebrates Aegon's second name day. Rhaenyra faces the prospect of marriage. I think she was looking at Harwin Strong like maybe he's going to be a snack.
Yeah, and Laris is just waiting for everyone to take off their boots around the fire. Man, this episode was awesome. I know that there were some people who were questioning the legitimacy of the battle scene at the end, but for all the spectacle and everything that it was worth, I thought episode 3 was excellent. And I love that last like one shot with Daemon, no words spoken, powerful scene that cemented him as Daemon Targaryen in my head forever. So I'm glad to see this one high.
Yeah, also I think that opening shot too, right? Of like, hail Prince Daemon. And then of course the dragon crushes him. But it's just so cool. Just like absolutely just fire, just leveling everything was just such a cool shot in this episode. Was this the White Stag episode? I think this was the hunt. This was the hunt as it was going on as well. And I think was this the first time we got to see Tywin Lannister?
Yeah, I believe so. Yes.
I think, yeah. So here comes House Lannister, and he's like such a, you know, he's just such
a because he's kind of questioning the fact that
Rhaenyra's Viserys calls him out.
Yeah, Viserys like, bite your tongue. Listen here, buddy.
And you're as soon as he's like, oh, I'm from House Lannister.
Everyone.
I remember you can go back and watch it on like the live stream. Just like, here we go. Like, rolling my eyes.
Legendary.
All right. Let's, what IMDb? IMDb had this episode second of his name. They gave it an 8.7. So I think our fans actually ended up being a little bit higher than IMDb, but as well, almost pretty in line.
Yeah, it's pretty close. And to give you an idea, second of his name got an 8.7. So did episode 9 of the Green Council. And it makes sense because if you think about it, those are the two episodes with the most spectacle, in my opinion, and the ones where people are like, I'm not sure if this is actually, you know what I mean? So I'm not shocked that it's not up in the nines on there, but 8.7 is a great score.
Yeah. Okay. So now we're into the top five here. So our number four spot, the fourth best episode. Is that right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Hold on. 10. I got to count here. I didn't like count it down here. 10, 9, 8, 7.
This would be number 6, 4, I believe.
No, this is number 5. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. That was number 6 spot. I'm sorry. I counted wrong somewhere. So this is our number 5 episode. Is also episode 5, We Light the Way, with a 4.54. There's a lot of fours and fives in here.
Yeah, so this is where I liked 4 more than 5, but most people, I was in the minority on that. I think a lot of people liked We Light the Way. Obviously, we have the feast celebrating the marriage proposal between Laenor and Rhaenyra, and we get that amazing scene of Allison walking in the green dress, along with the Velaryons making their entrance, which was dope. Get all the Joffrey stuff. There's a lot that happens in this episode, for sure.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm just now I have it. I put my thing in here, so I know what I'm actually saying. Yeah. So this was also the last episode of the younger cast too. Right. And I think we had been sort of not necessarily spoiled, but talked about on Twitter. So we were kind of watching this man with that context in mind. And this is, you know, the one where Otto Hightower gets the boot.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, we don't really talk about her that much. But young Allison, I think this was probably her best episode.
I would agree. The performance was excellent. Like I said, when she walks in and she's officially playing the Game of Thrones now, and you're hearing houses walk up to her, just so you know, like, you have our backing, and she's wearing green, and that's the color they wear when they go to war, and people had forgotten because they're in a time of peace. It's, there's a lot of little stuff there added in. And, you know, also Crispy Cole.
Mm-hmm.
Going to commit suicide and ends up not because Allison pulls him in. So it, very monumental episode as far as like how things end up developing 10 years later, and good send off for the younger cast.
I had to check here. Somebody said muted. Is that on purpose? I just had to check our audio to make sure.
We're good here. Yeah, we're good.
Okay. That's what I thought. Yeah. So episode 5, you know, that when she walks in and then Damon ends up walking in too, just a very, very interesting, just, you know, I don't know, really interesting scenes that were, you know, that we were getting. And then obviously Crispy Cole goes, you know, crazy, right?
Is this the episode where Damon also murders his wife? It is, isn't it?
Yes, because then he ends up telling what's his name off.
Yes.
Yeah.
Said I'll be getting my inheritance. Jesus.
Yeah. Dude. I know. You know, and did they ever really come back to that? Not really.
Not yet, but I have a feeling maybe when sides are being drawn, like maybe that'll come up, you know, whenever the war breaks out in season 2.
Yeah. Okay. So now the number 4 spot, and I'm with a 4.57. I kind of thought this might be higher. But so the number 4 spot is episode 9, the Green Council, with a 4.57. So it's a few ticks higher here.
Yeah, I was kind of curious if this one would fall down because, you know, there was that loud minority that really did not like the dragon through the floor, beast beneath the boards. But
I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, me and you have talked about it. We've defended it at this point till we're breathless and purple in the face. And we love it. So I'm actually okay with this being number four. Maybe it would have been a little bit higher for me, but a top five with a season this tight, I can't complain.
Yeah, I thought the episode was sweet. And again, you know, I talked about it during our top five moments. I think Aegon's crowning was super, super cool. It is just a spectacle. All of those swords and just the way the camera work is done in that episode. And you're just sitting there loathing the greens, right? Yes. Which is that's what Game of Thrones is about. When you have the fact that I'm sitting there and I'm like, as a fan, I'm like, I hate this episode. Right. Like, I absolutely hate this episode because you're seeing the greens win, but it's good. Right. It's such a good thing because I'm hating them as villainous characters, not like season seven of Game of Thrones, where I'm like, I don't like this because it's bad. Right. Like, this is bad television. It's like watching The Red Wedding. You're like, it's my least favorite episode. I don't even like watching The Red Wedding. Right. Because I don't want to see it hurts, man. I can't. It's difficult for me to watch because I feel so bad.
I mean,
that's when you know it's so good.
Man, I'm not going to lie. Whatever, you know, you stick the Conqueror's crown on his head and he's lifting the black. I'm like, man, you know what? I almost made a fist pump. I almost became a traitor that day.
Wow. Well, all those people, all those traitors people in there got what, you know, totally
got what they deserved.
Got what they deserved. Yeah. Let me see. Comment here from Robert saying, and I agree, I love the crowning. I think they put some more humanity into Aegon in the show than there is in the books. He's still a villain, but you understand it a little bit. And I think so too. And I like that, right? It actually causes me, because in the books, Aegon is just kind of a piece. You don't really get anything about him. Here, in some sense, he's not as bad as, say, Joffrey or Ramsay, right? I mean, Ramsay's just a dick, and there's just no other way to put it. Joffrey is just absolutely crazy, and he was spoiled and allowed to do kind of whatever he wanted.
Yeah, and I think Aegon is pretty evil, like, especially because he abused the handmaid or the servant girl. And I would never defend any of that stuff that he did. But the one thing that they were able to do in this episode is make us relate to Aegon for one of the most tangible feelings a human being can experience. And that's loneliness. When he talks about his father doesn't love him and no one likes me. Like, no one has. I think everyone has kind of experienced that moment where they're like, is anyone on my side? Does anyone care? And that is something that people can like latch into. So even on the macro, we look at all of Aegon and we're like, man, he's kind of a bad guy. If you look at that episode, and especially him going into it within the carriage with his mother, I just feel like he is a bit sympathetic in that moment. And that is another reason why this episode really worked for me, because you could see him feel acceptance for the first time in his life. I mean, it's a very powerful episode.
Yeah, it was. I absolutely loved the episode, except for the Masari a bit, which we both said was our least favorite part of the show. But I thought Aemon was very good in this episode, right?
Yeah.
Talking about how he wishes, almost, he's like, you know, I should be king, right? I should actually be the one ruling was kind of cool. And I'm glad we got that.
Yeah. And especially in this episode, Aemon's almost the baby face. Like, Aemon's also almost the person that out of the greens, when it's just the greens in that context, you're kind of cheering. I was cheering for Allison Aemon a little bit here. Like, whenever they send and they do the chase throughout the town or whatever, I'm rooting against Crispy Cole and Otto. Hate them. All my friends hate Otto. But with this, it's like Aemon was the baby face of this episode to immediately go into being the dastardly heel of episode 10. Really good switch. Shows that these characters are complex.
Yeah, absolutely. A few more comments here, right? Let me dive into these. Scott says, we see a lot more of what's going on in the city and the foreshadowing of bro versus bro civil war going on. Yeah, Eric, that was kind of cool that we got to see that. TK here, can you imagine how much would change if they granted Aegon's show wish and let Aemond take the throne because it was better suited than the dance would be crazier than it already is. Another comment here. Do you think that Aemon would be a better king than Aegon? More qualified for sure, but would he be better? I don't know.
I just saw him make a big mistake in episode 10. I don't know.
Yeah, I would say though, if part of Aemon's thing is he, I think, realizes that Aegon's not really that good and that he actually should, because remember, he's already in love with the sister wife that Aegon gets.
Yeah.
He probably would be a better king. I don't know that he would rule fairly or justly. It's kind of also hard to say because I actually think Aegon might not have actually been that bad of a king. I think he probably would have been somewhat like Robert in that he would have just been like, well, I'm just going to go do whatever I want because I'm the king and there's nothing, because he kind of does that anyway.
Yeah.
You know, there's like a, even though there's like a war going on, and then Otto and Alicent would have really just been the rulers. And I don't even know, honestly, that Otto and Alicent in the grand scheme of things, if they were, if that regime was ruling without the threat of Rhaenyra, I don't know that they really would have been all that bad.
It's a good question. Sounds like some propaganda from Greenside. I don't know how I'm feeling.
I just think it would. I mean, obviously, because they did rule for a long time under, you know, and we didn't really hear of like, oh, there's all these rebellions and stuff going on during the time in between, the, you know, like during Viserys's reign.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't seem, it's kind of like Tywin Lannister. Like you could, the books tell us that Tywin actually was the only thing holding the Mad King off, right? Yeah, For the longest time, he was actually the only thing holding the Mad King off. So I think it probably would have been like that. Although I have seen like polls. I will post one, and I'm sure it's going to be like 99% to one. But who was a better hand of the king, like Tywin Lannister or Otto Hightower? It's like not even close. Tywin Lannister would absolutely
wreck.
Dude, it's not even close.
Listen, Tywin Lannister ended a war.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Otto started one.
Yeah. Not even remotely close.
I love this stuff.
Okay, so here we go. So number three. I actually am a little shocked by this one. Okay. To be entirely honest, because now it's we have an enormous jump in our, you know, fractional points here. So number four, the fourth spot was episode 9 with a 4.57 out of 5 stars. The third spot goes to episode 7, Driftmark, with a 4.66.
A 4.
So,
okay.
This was the funeral, the dark episode where he claims Vhagar, and then we get sort of in a way, a callback to season 1, right? Where the king has to preside over kids that have injured each other.
Yeah. And that whole kid scene into the dispute of the family and Allison showing her true colors. I mean, some of the most gripping moments. Like if someone told me that was their favorite moment, like actually, I think me and you may have overlooked that a little bit, huh? When we were making our top 5. Cause now I'm sitting here like, damn, that was a good scene. Whenever she slices his arm.
Yeah. You know, Jimmy, every holiday season, I find myself with a dilemma. At my wife's extended family Christmas, we do a white elephant gift, and I never know what to get.
Well, Matt, spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. The busy holiday season is here, and Uncommon Goods makes it less stressful with incredible hand-picked gifts for everyone on your list, all in one spot. Gifts that spark joy, wonder, delight, and that it's exactly what I wanted feeling.
Yeah, they scour the globe for original, handmade, absolutely remarkable things. Somehow they know exactly the perfect gift for every single person you know. Here's a few of my favorite gifts that I found on their website. Things like chocolate from around the world, handcrafted cribbage boards, wine glasses, bourbon sets, just about anything you want to find that would be a unique or uncommon gift, they have in their selection.
And when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out this holiday season.
Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade in the U.S. They have the most meaningful, out-of-the-ordinary gifts anywhere. They even have gifts that you can personalize.
And from holiday hosts to hostess gift to the coolest finds for kids, to hits for everyone from book lovers to diehard sports fans, Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, not the same old selections you can find just anywhere.
And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3 million to date. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/bendtheknee. That's uncommongoods.com/bendtheknee for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the reproductive rights amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
That was good.
It was good, but I don't know if it hit as hard as the trailer made it seem like it was going to. Now they can see you for what you are.
It was just so well acted that, like, right. Especially when they cut over and, like, you have the it's clear as day that they're Harwin Strong's kids. Like, it's clear they're standing next to Corliss, and right. It's like, come on. And I don't know. That scene has a lot. Also, there's a lot of Viserys there. And we all know that Patty is the man. So I feel like I may have undervalued this a little bit. I would like to note that our top three are all from the second half of the season.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, they are. And I'm as surprised at just how big the jump was. Because the next three episodes, like what you consider is like a pretty huge jump compared to, I mean, you have a log jam. I mean, really, you go down. There's with a point, you know, they're all 4.4, you know, going up. And then it's just like a few fractional points that could literally separate you being in fourth place all the way to 10th. But yeah. Then these top three are like a pretty substantial leap in the terms of, you know, minor fractional points, right? As you want to get in here. So 4.66, IMDb had this at a 9.2. which I think would be their third highest rated episode as well.
Yeah.
So actually, I think we're kind of in line with our fan vote over on YouTube, which all had like more than our subscribers, to be fair, because a lot of these have like 15,000 views. If you guys could just hit the subscribe button again, we'd really appreciate it. But but so it's great. So it's people outside of just our, you know, like diehard Game of Thrones fan base that subscribes here on YouTube. So for me, actually, you know what, in all honesty, this I think is what is towards my like least favorite episodes.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know why. I'm just, of all the episodes in the moments, I'm like, oh, I really want to go back and watch that. I just don't, this one is just not the one where I'm like, oh, I really want to go back and watch that. So
yeah, I think
it's not bad. I gave this like a 4 out of 5, on my ranking, but on my vote for the episodes. I think it is just, again, the darkness, like really, really dark scene, and they filmed it in broad daylight.
Yeah, I did think that was a bit of an interesting, you know, that I don't know why you would shoot in the day to make it night. This seems kind of silly.
Yeah.
I don't know anything though. Like these people know way more than us. So I always like try to default of, well, they probably made the better decision, but
yeah, Daemon and Rhaenyra's wedding I thought was cool out of this. And then I do think Aemon claiming Vhagar was, you know, was cool. But I don't know. Maybe it was just for whatever reason, this was just not the one I was most into.
Yeah.
So okay. So our number two spot. So now you're talking about, again, a pretty significant jump from a 4.66 average to a 4.7 average, which is crazy. I mean, that alone is just crazy. This is, I think, actually, this is where we begin to differ because IMDb has this as the best episode of the season, which is season one, episode 8. And I'm surprised that this wasn't our number one. And actually, the one above it is actually even more substantially higher. Almost like, I mean, you're getting like an almost perfect rating. But this was like Jimmy and I's, I think, favorite episode. The King Viserys episode, Lord of the Tides, 4.7 still is pretty insane.
That is insane, but I cannot believe this isn't number one. I mean, like I've said it multiple times now, but this is one of my favorite episodes of any Westeros.
All of Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just incredible. But hey, you know what? I'm glad that people love the next episode even more. I mean, that's great. That's good news. That's what you want, really, when you're wrapping up a seat. This thing, Patty, was so good in such a surprise for me, at least. Sure how I felt about him getting cast. Not that he wasn't a good actor. I just wasn't sure, right?
And yeah, I'm unfamiliar with him to be. Yeah, I'll absolutely crush it. This episode was just so absolutely phenomenal. Not only the stuff with him walking in, I even think the scenes of the feast that they were having, there was just so much cool symbolism in this. Like when he's sitting there and he's getting, they're kind of like, you know, putting whatever they're putting on him and trying to get him ready for dinner, and you have like the seven pointed star like casting light down on him, and he tells Otto, you know, no, I don't want anything, I want to do that. So, and I loved the Vaemond you know, keep his tongue out of nowhere, like, wow, that was crazy.
Had a little bit of everything in this one.
Yeah, just such a just good episode. Even Luke being an absolute moron, sending Aemond the pig. Like, I don't know why he thought that at all was a good idea. And yeah, talk about F around and find out. And then on Twitter, I will say this was one of my favorite episodes, at least on Twitter. Just the fan response to see what's going on, because I found this Twitter account that's called The Greens, and it's just like totally like a meme account, and they're totally just like we're just all green propaganda. And they posted the shot of Daemon standing there when Aemon, and looks like him might go to toe-to-toe, and then Aemon walks away. And I remember the post they said, and they said, yeah, Daemon was shook, and everyone's like, dude, what are you talking about?
Here's a question for you. I've seen people speculate this. Do you believe that the dinner scene where they're all getting along and Otto is actually like making jokes and Allison's laughing and stuff, do you think that that was shot in a manner where it's actually Viserys having a hallucination?
Oh,
I thought that was a really cool theory. I don't necessarily know if it's true, but like people are saying that they never really got along, and it was just because as soon as Viserys leaves,
because it's through Viserys's eyes. Wow. That is an amazing. I will say, I did see a quote from Olivia Cooke saying that the shot of her and laughing is like totally something else. Like, I think it was like somebody on the side. I think maybe even like
it's Otto.
Did he say? He said it's like, he's, I mean, like from like in the filming.
He's making her laugh, and she literally says, "Stop making me laugh." And they use that clip that was like,
right,
like extra footage.
Music over it. Right.
Yeah.
I also read that Viserys's crown wasn't even supposed to fall off when he's walking up, but both actors just went for it. So they just went with, like, it's so awesome to see sometimes like just how like you don't expect something and it ends up being the thing. So interesting. Yeah, so IMDb had this at a 9.4. they had episode 10, which is our number one, at a 9.3, so just a fraction of a point there for us. Kind of a huge swing, though. This had the most number one votes on our entire list from our fan vote, and has a 4.73 average. Wow. So that's like even a higher jump. So as close as all these things have been, there have been a couple big breaks, at least in terms of like, you're talking a few points here. But yeah, so the Black Queen, and I guess I would have to say, maybe, I don't know, maybe it was just because we finally got to see Dragon versus Dragon, and it was one of the things everybody really wanted.
Also, just that last 10 to 15 minutes was essentially a monster movie. It was beautifully shot. The music was excellent. And yeah, we see like the literal first chomp of the dance. And I can see why this landed so well. And do you think that there's a little bit of this impact coming from the fact that the last time we saw a Game of Thrones television show and their final episode, it didn't go well. And this time it was like a brief, you know, everything is going well, but it could all fall apart at the end. But the finale was solid. In my opinion, was phenomenal. And maybe it's just a big sigh of relief and people loved it. And not to mention, I mean, the final scene is very powerful with Rhaenyra's face. I mean, that's a haunting image that mirrors what we saw in the first episode of her face as well. So I'm not shocked that it's high. I'm shocked that it beat episode 8. But like I said, that's good. That bodes well. Yeah. So
yeah, that does. I mean, again, the lowest episode, which was the Rogue Prince on our fan vote, and I think I'll even pull up IMDb, but IMDb didn't have a single one below an 8 out of 10. So we were actually quite a bit higher overall, but for us it was a 4.43 was the lowest, and a 4.73. So, I mean, you're talking an absolute amazing season one for a four. I mean, to not even have a 3-star episode.
Yeah.
Right. Out of 5. I mean, that's insane. And this isn't even 4-star. This is 4.4. So, I mean, really, then the entire season averaged out to be, you know, a 4.5, which is like, I mean, you can't ask for, I don't think there's any show that I can go and look at that is like a single season is an absolute perfect 5 out of 5.
Yeah. Not many shows could achieve that. I was actually looking back through the Game of Thrones IMDb to see like where it kind of like started to go off the rails. And it's interesting, like there's some dips into the 7s with season 5, and I think even season 6. Season 7 really strong overall. This is IMDb I'm talking about. And then obviously season 8 had a ton of low ratings. But I went back and looked at season 1, and season 1 of Game of Thrones has a 9.6 episode, which is episode 9. And then it has a 9.4 for the last episode. So it actually had an episode that ties the highest of House of the Dragon in season 1 and one that beat it. And it also never had an episode go below, I think, an 8.7. I might be wrong on that. So on IMDb standards, they actually ranked season 1 of Game of Thrones a little bit higher, which is interesting because I feel like I think we did a poll, right, on our channel. And
we did. I'll pull that up here.
Here, I have it here. Our viewers, we asked, you know, which season 1 was better, Game of Thrones or House of the Dragon? And 63% of you casted your vote to say House of the Dragon, 37% said Game of Thrones. And that was with 17,000 votes.
Which again, hey guys, hit the subscribe button, man. That's like 3 times more than we have subscribers, which is just crazy. But yeah, in the comments, there's 120 comments in there. Which is absolutely, some people are saying recency bias, and yeah, of course, there's obviously
budget.
There's a lot of that stuff to take into consideration. But I think start to finish, even, you know, I think I do actually like House of the Dragon season 1 more. Although maybe for a few reasons. One, Game of Thrones to me, we've talked about our book rankings. Actually, I don't know if you and I have actually done it on here to talk about which books we prefer the most, because I actually have Game of Thrones as my second favorite book. I just think it's just so good. And I think it's such a gripping sort of almost single narrative through the journey of Ned Stark that it's just start to finish. I think the second best book in the series, obviously behind Storm of Swords. Here, though, I kind of remember going in like before House of the Dragon thinking, man, season 1 of House of the Dragon, like, I'm excited for it and it's going to be Game of Thrones, but the content they're going to be covering, like, if you had told me this is where we're starting, this is where we're finishing before I'd seen any trailers or anything, I might be like, ooh, I don't know about that. Because the context in the book, it's like, yeah, some of that stuff is cool, but I just don't know that it's going to be.
It needed to be fleshed out, and we weren't sure how the fleshing out would go.
Right. We didn't know that Patty Considine, even George R. Martin, was going to say it's going to be better than my Viserys in the books. You know, I didn't, you know, if you had told me before any of the castings, like, oh, Matt Smith is going to be Daemon Targaryen, I'd be okay. Well, now, man, right? So just to think about it, right, from like the book context, book this block of the Dance of Dragons versus the book block of Game of Thrones, I'd say there's no way. But I think that because this to me is even better than the books, mm-hmm. it's like, man, I think I am on that. I mean, Game of Thrones season one has some absolutely amazing moments, right? Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Getting to see the wall for the first time, obviously getting the wolves, Ned Stark, Rob King in the North, Cereo Pharrell is, I think, even cooler than in the books. Obviously, Robert Baratheon is super cool, but I think actually I could go back and I could really pick it apart and say, yeah, but this was better in the books. This was better in the books, but the books are more fleshed out. Here, the books are less fleshed out, so it gives more opportunity for the show to shine.
Yeah, I think it's a tougher adaptation. I mean, one of the reasons why season one of Game of Thrones was so successful is that it did follow George's template. Right. Very faithful adaptation as far as fidelity to the source material goes. So that definitely helps for me. I actually like season one of Game of Thrones a little bit more. And for the simple reason that what George accomplished in Game of Thrones in publishing, right, and in the fantasy genre in the 90s was something that people, you know, David Gemmell had written some pretty gritty stuff, and also Glenn Cook's Black Company was also considered, you know, pretty dark at the time, but George like really took everyone on one way and then flipped it on its head, right? And it was the first time really since Tolkien that I think people felt that grandioso world building happening. So It was just a different feel, right? And it revolutionized modern fantasy in a lot of ways. And then here comes the Game of Thrones show, you know, however many years later, 15, 12 years later, something like that. And all of a sudden, it has now flipped television on its head.
Totally changed everything.
Yeah, and for it to do that in two different mediums at two different time points is an incredible feat. It has literally changed the way television, I shouldn't say all shows, but shows that are meant to be taken seriously, especially fantasy shows. It's just changed the game. So for me, I think season one of Game of Thrones, especially on the budget that they were on, like they had to cut out the battle. Tyrion gets knocked out because they didn't have enough money. And also the pilot was a mess apparently, and they had to reshoot it and all this stuff. So just the feat of getting a fantasy show on HBO to get a season two is crazy to me. I also just think the beheading of Ned Stark is so monumental.
Right.
Like so monumental. So not to say I didn't love House of the Dragon season one. I did. But for me, Game of Thrones season one is
it's to be fair, it's also a much more straightforward narrative, right? I mean,
it's super tight. Yeah.
Because it's not, there's not the time jump.
It's a murder mystery, right? Dude. It's a murder mystery.
It is a murder mystery. I mean, episode one, right? I mean, we see the start of the White Walkers, right?
Whoa, the prologue.
Like, the prologue. So good. And then we get to go to the wall and they're exploring the world. Daenerys has her dragons. Khal Drogo is there. I mean, there's a lot, like just even outside of Westeros. I think one of the, Catelyn capturing Tyrion too is like the perfect sort of mid-season, like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like, because now you're like hooked. For me, when I actually think of what might be the best moment in Game of Thrones season one, you know, it's probably Ned Stark. But what's the most important moment? Maybe Jamie pushing Bran. But I would say easily, like, I don't know. If you want to say about it, like, most important moment might honestly be Catelyn capturing Tyrion, because that happens at just the perfect spot in season one to keep everyone hooked for that, because that's like the middle, like, oh my God, like you just might have started a war.
Well, there's a cascade, right? Like, and this is something that George R. R. Martin's very good at, but he cascades consequences. So like you have the push out the window, you have the capturing of Tyrion, which then leads to the battle between Jaime and Ned, and obviously in the show it's a little bit different, but these things kind of compile on each other, and you look back and you're like, oh no, it messed up there. Oh no, it messed up there. Oh no, it messed up there. And you can go all the way back into the first episode. House of the Dragon has this as well. Like, I had a lot of people, you know, online saying, and I was one of them, I wasn't sure how I felt about Allison misunderstanding the Aegon thing, and that, and people were saying that started this whole thing, but not really. If you think about it, so many other bad decisions have happened to that point that like it was inevitable, to the fact that when Allison walks into the council room and says Viserys is dead, they all the small council, they were moving ahead. They were going to crown Aegon, whether or not she had misconstrued. The only thing she could have done at that point has been not a part, right? Like, I'm not a part of this, which Otto would have just locked her in a tower. She's lost. She's went mad with grief over Viserys and she can't be seen. And then he would have put Aegon on the throne anyways. So, you know, it's one of those things that like you, it's really hard to point at one thing in either of the season ones and go, you know, that is the inciting event, right?
Right. Yeah. You know, it's also interesting too, because I think one of the reasons I'm loving some of the choices they're making, because again, the text we've talked about this is told to us through Mushroom and Grand Maester Munkin, right? So it's like, it's an Archmaester Gildane. So it's totally like this, just a few people's accounts, and it is what it is. But you look at, say, Alicent misinterpreting the dream. Then you have Aemond not really meaning to kill Luke and the dragons acting on their own, because a lot of times that's what happens in war, right? I mean, I'm a history major. I can tell you that there's a lot more that caused World War One than just like Archduke Franz Ferdinand
got killed.
Right. I mean, but like that's still ultimately what they kind of like teach you is like,
yeah, it's a massive moment that right. And if it wasn't that, it would have been something else.
Right. And everyone was just allies with each other. So, well, we got to go to war. I mean, but it's sometimes it is stuff like that actually happens that causes like, well, now we go to war. I mean, so it is kind of, you know, interesting.
And don't the small people suffer from the elite's little games? Like,
right.
I mean, it's frustrating to me because I look back through all the history of war and everything, and it comes down to a couple people saying, yeah, this is worth losing millions. Like, we're going to lose millions of lives for this. We're going to battle it out. Right.
Over totally dumb stuff. And to be fair, I think, you know, they are doing a job with the green side to be like, yeah, okay, they crowned Aegon. Which to me is totally an act of war, but they didn't draw first blood. I mean, you really want to go look at it. I mean, Alicent's side has actually drawn way more, or Rhaenyra's side has drawn way more blood and first blood, right? I mean, Luke attacks Aemond.
Yeah.
And then also Luke attacks Aemond again. I mean, it's his dragon that shoots fire at Vhagar.
Well, hey, that was Arax's decision, okay?
Right. Yeah, I know, but still. So I do think it's cool the way they're kind of portraying this to make you see like, oh man, like this mistake happens and then this happens. And so I think it's cool. But so any things in our rankings here, Jimmy, the fan rankings you find interesting or disagree with, or you think you're pretty much on the same page?
Well, the one thing I feel a little bit vindicated by is the fact that if you look at the top five, I think only one episode is from the first half of the season. Right? Is that correct?
Yeah. So let me count down again. So from 10 to 1. So again, I'll say that. So 10th place is episode 2. 9th place is episode 6. 8th place is episode 4. 7th place is episode 1. 6th place, episode 3. 5th place, episode 5. 4th, episode 9. 3rd place is episode 7. 2nd place, episode 10. 1st place, episode or second place episode 8, first place episode 10. So some that I think I would have had higher. For me, I almost have episode 1 as like in my top 3.
Oh wow.
I just think it was just such a good opening. And again, you look at the breakdown of some of these. I mean, from the from 4 to 10, really, that's where the big shift happens. I mean, you're talking, it's a 4.57 to 4.43. So some of those are literally like 1 point. That totally shifts around the whole deal. But I think for me, my top three episodes would be number 8 is number 1. And then I might have 10 as my episode, my second favorite. Then I think I'd probably have episode 1 as my third favorite.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty close to what the viewers had voted on for the show. I would have had 4 at 5 most likely, and then I think I would have
switched, and I'd have 9.
Yeah, you have 9 real high.
I'd have 9 at the number 4 spot is perfect for me. I think it could go in my top 3. Just kind of depends really how I'm thinking about it, but ones I think for me, I don't know what it was, but fans voted episode 7 Driftmark is the third best. For me, that's probably down towards like the 8 or 9 spot for me.
Yeah, I would probably keep it right where they had it. The only difference is I would take 8, put it at 1, put 10 to 2, and then change out the 5 spot for episode 4. I really liked episode 4. One of the reasons why I liked it is because it was an episode with a ton of sexy time in it, but it was shot much differently than Game of Thrones, and they talked about that in the behind the scenes afterwards, and I just appreciated it. I thought it was really well done. I really liked a lot of the direction in that episode. So I think that I'm pretty close to what our fans voted on. But the thing I found interesting is that the top 4 spots were all second half of the season, yeah. Which is funny because do you remember the trepidation people had going into the second half? Like, I'm out. I remember, I mean, episode 6, and it is the lowest ranked one, at least on IMDb. We had a couple people jump in the live chat, say, I'm done with this show. I can't believe they switched the actors. This is BS. And
yeah, episode 6, episodes. So what it really shows you though, is it's not only just the Rhaenyra and Allison actors with the younger cast. It was really the full, when Aegon and Aemond and Luke and all of them age up.
Yeah.
Because all of those episodes, which would be with the older, younger kids, right? Because you had, because 6 and 7, right, were the younger Alicent kids, right? Where what's his name, David Tennant's son, plays Aegon. That was episode 6 and 7. So 9, 8, and 10 has like older Aemond, and I think, man, it's just that Aemond actor is just so freaking good.
Yeah, all the Aegons have been great, by the way, thus far. Yeah. Even the little baby Aegon.
They've all been great. Yeah. So really what it shows is now that we have this full cast, I mean, all of those episodes, so 9, 8, and 10 are all above 4.57. So very, very interesting. And going into season 2, I'll continue to say it here. Going into season 2, you have one ultra important casting, and you have to get this right. Cause the back half of the show, right? Like seasons 3 and 4, especially season 4, hinges almost entirely on your casting of this character. And I don't know who they've picked, but man, maybe we could just get the actor who plays Aemond and give him like dark hair and have him show up as Craig and Stark, because he's so freaking good. But they've crushed the casting so far. So whoever you're going to cast as Craig and Stark has to be like the most
pivotal,
important character. Yeah. Oh, they've definitely already cast him. Comment here, because they're beginning filming in like early 2023.
Yeah. Yeah. Craig and Stark is one of the most badass characters in all of Song of Ice and Fire, and they needed to do it justice.
He's going to be way more badass in the show.
Listen, we got a Baratheon in season 1, and I was nervous because, you know me, It was a great casting, and I was nervous, but they delivered. So I have very good faith in the casting choices, and I think Craig and Stark is going to wow a lot of us. And a lot depends on him. So
it's probably going to be somebody we have no idea who it is. We have no idea. It'll be like, I don't, honestly, outside of Matt Smith, I was really kind of unfamiliar with a lot of this cast.
Yeah, which is always fun too, right? That happened in Game of Thrones, right? You know, Macy Williams and
Graham McTavish, you know, but yeah, a lot of this cast I was pretty unfamiliar with.
Yeah. And they all did a wonderful job. They really did.
A question here. Actually, just as I typed in Craig and Stark, will Craig and Stark have a dire wolf?
I think they will, because just because, sell that merch, boy.
I mean, why not?
I mean, whatever. He could ride one in for all I give a shit. I'd
be badass.
I'll take it. He could put a saddle on him.
It'd be so down.
That wasn't in the book.
So down. Ugh. Awesome. All right, guys. Well, hey, thank you guys all so much for hanging out here on a Thursday night, and if football's on and other stuff's on. And I did drop a half hour video earlier today, so you can go check that out, as well as podcast. Dropped a Patreon episode last night. We're going to be doing our Patreon hangout at the end of this month, so stay tuned, because we have so much more content. I mean, we still have to do all of the breaking down of House of the Dragon. We're going to have to come back and just do a direct comparison of a House of the Dragon versus Game of Thrones, season one. That's got to be its own sort of standalone thing. Then we have another bigger project where it's going to take some time, but working on that. So stay tuned, because it's
going to be fun. That one's definitely going to be fun. Probably the biggest.
So with that, guys.
So I was to say probably the biggest bend the knee project in recent memory, I would say.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
definitely. So with that, as always, thank you guys for watching. Thank you guys for listening. Stay tuned for a lot more Song of Ice and Fire content. And hey, season two, we know we're going to Winterfell in House of the Dragon. So with that, winter is coming.